Good evening, or I should say good afternoon, or good evening, or good morning, whenever you're listening to this. It is currently Tuesday, November 14th, 1:18 p.m. here in rainy Florida. Peter DeFee Jr. here with you, joined as always by Harris Eisenberg. Harris is in Long Island, New York. Harris, how is everything up north?
First of all, it's on Long Island. Come on now. There we go. Yeah, in. Can't do that.
Sorry.
Come on.
Sorry, on Long Island.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, it's all good. You know, the weather is getting a little chilly up here. I'm sure you don't know anything about that in Florida. I'm shocked it rains in Florida at this time of year. Yeah, you know, can't complain. Life is good. Yeah, a little quiet, but still some baseball to talk about somehow.
Yeah, this is how we get our this is how we get our cold fronts. It rains during the months of November, December. Then it'll get into like the 70s for a couple of days, and then it'll go back up into the 80s.
I was down there at the beginning of January, and it was 82 degrees. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I used to have this Christmas tradition where we would play hockey, street hockey, and we'd be in like shorts and a tank top because it was like 90 degrees outside, and we were sweating our butts off.
See, we played street hockey in the snow.
Yeah. Oh, see, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, see, when you're, you know, up in New York, you could probably play street, or you could play, you know, pond hockey.
Yes, we do. I actually had my first ever experience skating on a pond last year. You know, sneak through some fences, maybe legal, maybe not. You know, get out there like super early in the morning before the sun comes out. Yeah, it's fun. It's very fun.
So, but like you said, a lot of baseball to talk about. We weren't on the air last week. Just my own fault. Every time I came home, I had like zero sleep last week, doing everything, just running around with the chicken with his head chopped off. Every time I came home, I took a nap.
So I slept
a lot during the week. So we have a lot to talk about. Rookies of the Year were announced yesterday. I believe it is going to be the Cy Young. Is it tonight? Is that tonight, or is it Manager of the Year?
I believe it is Manager of the Year, but we can always double check.
Does it go Rookie of the Year, Manager of the Year, Cy Young, MVP?
You know what? I'm kind of sick of this whole thing, right? You know, they need to do the awards on one day. One day, have the big dinner. You know how they do it where they, you know, present the award like right before spring training, you know, at that big dinner in New York City. One day, have everybody there. Look at all the other leagues. All the other leagues do
kinda
it on
like
one day.
Kind of like how the NFL has their NFL awards night.
Yes, yes. NFL, the NHL does it. The NBA does it. Just have the award night. It's just, it's hard to follow, man. Manager of the Year is tonight. Cy Young is Wednesday. And then the MVP is Thursday. But yeah, listen, we got to move it to one day, people. I mean, also viewership. Like, you really get to say, oh, you know, got to, you know, stop what I'm doing for four consecutive, you know, 6 p.m. hours because I got to, you know, see the interview of Corbin Carroll winning the Rookie of the Year and Shohei make his speech about MVP. Just do it on one night. Prime time, 9 o'clock. Do it in Vegas or something. Come on.
Maybe do it in Vegas like the day before game one of the World Series.
That
kind
would
of
also
like how the
be
NFL
a really
does it on their
idea.
Saturday. The Saturday before the Super Bowl, the NFL does it. I don't know when the NBA
NHL
or
does
NHL
it.
Does it.
NHL does it the night before the draft.
So there you go.
Which is a good idea.
That seems a little bit long after the season.
It's actually only like a week or two after the Stanley Cup final.
Oh, okay. Because I know the draft for the NFL is like 2 to 3 months after the season, so that would be a long time to have those awards. But yeah, no, I agree with you. But anyways, both Rookie of the Year awards were unanimous. You had Gunnar Henderson, who had 28 home runs, 82 RBIs, had an .814 OPS his first season with the Orioles, and then Corbin Carroll, who, I mean, you just throw out this stat line for a rookie, 285, 25 home runs, 54 stolen bases, had an .868 OPS, played an amazing outfield for the Diamondbacks, you know, helped him get to the World Series. I mean, you knew he was going to be the Rookie of the Year. It was just depending on whether it was going to be unanimous or not. There was a couple of good rookies on in both leagues. I know Tanner Bibby had a really good rookie season for the Guardians. I almost called them the Indians. For the Guardians. And then over on the NL side, you had Kodai Senga, who had a really good rookie season too, even though he's a little older, but he's still technically a rookie. He had a really good rookie season. So it's going to be interesting to see how he bounces back in his sophomore year. But Harris, just your take on the rookies of the year. In my opinion, they got this 100% correct. Unanimously, I don't know, because I think you could have given some of the other guys some first place votes just because of how good they were. But I mean, Gunnar Henderson just came up and lit the world on fire, was on a first place Orioles team that won 101 games. The Diamondbacks obviously went to the World Series with Corbin Carroll, and he just had a tremendous rookie season after not thinking he was going to make the opening day roster.
Yeah, they 100% got it right. Totally agree with you there. Corbin Carroll, I mean, the stolen bases, man. You know what, 52 stolen bases. You know, that's 54. Why I kept saying, 54, excuse me. That's why I kept saying during the playoffs, you know, you got to find a way to activate this guy's legs, you know, in the LCS and the World Series. And I don't think they did it enough, but, you know, they were able to, you know, obviously go to the World Series. So Corbin Carroll, yeah, obviously well-deserved. I think he's going to be one of the better center fielders in the league, you know, for the next 5-10 years, especially with the power. I mean, if you get 25 homers out of the leadoff spot every year, that's pretty solid without having to sacrifice, you know, the makeshift leadoff that you could say, you know, when Kyle Schwarber leads off and hits 47 home runs, that don't count. But, you know, Gunnar Henderson, you know, last year the kid came up right at the end of the year and he was solid, you know, but a lot of hype coming out of the minor league system. Orioles minor league system is loaded and still is. And he comes in, he really looked like a seasoned pro, and the dude honestly carries himself like a seasoned pro too. So, you know, I can't really think of anybody else in the American League that really like stood a chance next to Gunnar Henderson. National League, I mean, yeah, you know, Kodai Senga had a really good year, you know, on a bad Mets team, a little older, like you said, and you know, there's been a lot of debate over the years. Where's the cutoff of how old a rookie can be to be eligible for Rookie of the Year? I don't know. I think if it's your first year in the league, you're eligible for it. You know, Senga had a good year, but, you know, Corbin Carroll, again, went to the World Series, and I think ultimately if you look at that Diamondbacks team, you say, okay, who's the superstar? Corbin Carroll immediately, you know, comes to mind.
Yeah, James Altman was also the third-place finisher in the National League with the Dodgers. He had a really good rookie season with the Dodgers when he got called up in May. And then Tristan Casas, who had a really good second half for the Boston Red Sox, was also a finalist for the Rookie of the Year in the American League. He had 24 home runs and had an OPS of 856. He had a really good second half of the season, though. I think out of those 24 home runs, I think he might have hit like 15 or so in the second half, which, I mean, is a plus side for a Red Sox team that wasn't all too great, especially in the second half of the season, and is looking to rebound. And I know we're going to talk about some free agents this year, and I think they have a couple of free agents coming their way. So if you can have a guy like Tristan Casas manning first base, playing a good defensive first base, hitting you 30 home runs a season or so, it's going to be really good. But yeah, I mean, Corbin Carroll, you said it, using his legs. We didn't see the Diamondbacks use their legs a whole lot until Game 7 of the World's Championship Series, where they stole four bases in Game 7 and kind of ran havoc on the Phillies. But first player since 1900 to have 50 plus stolen bases and 25 plus home runs in a rookie season, right? And even one of these comments on the MLB page is saying, and I completely agree with this. People are saying that Ronald Acuna's 40-70 is untouchable. Meanwhile, we have a rookie going 25-50 while playing injured for a month. And it just goes to show you that how impressive of a season Corbin Carroll had as a rookie. I mean, you hit five, maybe six, seven more home runs, and you're up in the 30-50 club, you might be getting some MVP votes. Now, he wasn't a finalist for MVP, obviously, and we could talk about how Matt Olson wasn't even a finalist for MVP. It's Acuna, Betts, and Freeman. But that just goes to show you how dominant of a season he had for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure Corbin Carroll got some MVP votes, you know, whether they were third place or however far in place that they go. you know, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, the stolen bases are a huge part of the game now, which is why I believe Acuña is going to be the MVP. So, yeah, I feel like anytime you see, you know, 40 or 50 stolen bases, it's impressive. I mean, you know, I was very lucky this past summer. I spent the year in the minor leagues, and, you know, a lot of the guys who moved up minor league systems in terms of prospect rankings are guys who stole 50-plus bases, like Chandler Simpson, who's a Rays prospect, you know, near 100 stolen bases. Victor Scott, Cardinals prospect, near 100 stolen bases. You know, these guys went from, you know, barely being in the top 30 of their organizations to, you know, being well in the top 10 and even in the top 5. So, you know, that's kind of the new, kind of like the new batting average in a way. You know how, you know, batting average kind of gets overlooked now? It's like, well, you know, you got to incorporate some, you know, sort of, you know, natural element to the game, and legs is where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but stolen bases were up for the first time in at least a decade in Major League Baseball. Now, whether that's the new pickoff rule where you can only throw over twice, we saw a lot of players like Trey Turner take advantage of that. After the second pickoff, he would just get a huge lead. And as soon as the pitcher even started moving, he was taken off and he would get there. He was 30 for 30 this year. You know, put that in the 30 for 30 on ESPN. But, you know, maybe it's the bigger bases. I don't know what it was, but you're exactly right. A lot of the guys that moved up prospect rankings were guys that stole a lot of bases. The speed is back in the game. I mean, it's always been in the game because you want to be able to stretch a single into a double or a double into a triple, stuff like that, get from first to home on a double. But it was more prevalent in the game today, right? Especially on the base pass. I mean, it's always been prevalent in the outfield and everything, trying to, you know, track down baseballs and whatnot. And obviously that's always been the case, but especially on the bases, a lot of guys were looking for speed.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a baseball aficionado, I mean, you remember when Billy Hamilton came up and everyone's like, oh my God, he stole like 100. And I think it was like 133 bases in the minor leagues. He's going to tear it up. You know, it never happened, but you know, there was so much hype around the fact that he was lightning fast, and he was able to make a career out of being fast. He turned into kind of like a non-winning Terrence Gore in a way. So, yeah, you know, not to bring that conversation up again. But, yeah, you know, like this is something that teams really need to consider, you know. Like small balls kind of out of the game, you know, nobody likes bunting. So how do you move runners over? You know, you got to use your own legs.
Yeah, and real quick before we move on to some managerial news, this is the fifth season where both Rookie of the Years were unanimous. It joined 2017 where Bellinger and Judge were unanimous, and I mean Bellinger almost won MVP as Rookie of the Year as well, and so did Judge for that matter too. 1997, Scott Rolen and Nomar Garciaparra. 1993, Mike Piazza and Tim Salmon. And 1987, Santiago and Mark McGwire. Santiago's not ringing a bell. I don't know his first name, so I apologize to any 1987 Rookie of the Year award-winning Santiago fans out there.
Yeah, nothing, couldn't tell you.
Nothing's coming to my mind.
Sorry, couldn't
tell
you. But
I know Mark McGwire. I think Mark McGwire even finished top five in MVP voting that year, too. I think he hit like 40. Oh, yeah, he set the rookie record for home runs that year with 40-some-odd home runs. It did get broken in the American League until Judge hit his, what, 52?
Yep. I think no, that year? Yeah, 52. Yep.
So, or who, was it Judge that broke that?
No, Pete Alonso broke it in 19. He had 53.
That's right. So, Mark McGwire almost finished, you know, as MVP voter that year. I know Garciaparra, I think, got some MVP votes that year as well. And then Judge and Bellinger, obviously, of course, finished second in MVP. Basically the same way that Mike Trout finished second in MVP in his rookie year, too, in 2012. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Orioles had a couple more Rookie of the Years, you know, coming up through their system in the next couple of years. It would not surprise me to just see a run of Rookie of the Year awards, because this is their first time winning or getting this award since 1989, where Greg Olson won it. So they have a lot of good guys coming up through their system. I don't think Westberg's a rookie anymore. I don't think Grayson Rodriguez can be a rookie anymore. But you still have Jackson Holliday coming up. DL Hall, I think, might not be a rookie anymore. I'd have to see service time.
I mean, you got to look at their system. Look at their system and look at some of these Colton prospects. Cowser. Like Colton Cowser, yeah, Jackson Holliday, obviously. Heston, what is that?
Heston Kjerstad. Yep, yeah. Kjerstad.
This Colby Mayo kid, by the way. Watched a lot of him in Double A. He's a corner infielder, plays third base. He's pretty legit. Like, this kid's a really good player. Again, the Orioles kind of full in the infield, but you talk about rookie of the years to come, just based on, you know, our knowledge of college baseball. Enrique Bradfield Jr. is the number 8 prospect in the Orioles system.
Their draft pick this last year.
Yeah, he's a stud. Mac Horvath also, you know.
I mean, you talk about a guy too that you talk about a guy that might shoot up a ranking with his speed. Enrique Bradfield Jr. has 60-70 stolen base speed. I mean, we saw him in Vanderbilt, and he was, I mean, a single turned into a triple in 2 pitches.
Yeah, he was the most exciting player to watch in 2022 and 21 when people started to figure out who he was when Vandy went to the World Series and lost to Mississippi State. But yeah, he's a super exciting young kid. You know, he's a guy too. He hits for average. He's going to stretch singles into doubles. I'm not sure how he did in his first professional season, but to be already ranked as the number 9 prospect in the system, in a system that's loaded, his projected ETA is 2026. So, you know, he could come up sooner. He may not, but that's another guy, if you're looking at the Orioles long term, who could be in the Rookie of the Year conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the only bugaboo with him was his hit tool. You know, if it was going to play at the major league level. And I think that's the same thing that happened with Billy Hamilton. Yeah, he was fast. He would get on base and he would steal second, steal third. But the batting average was just never there to warrant a lot of playing time. He was always a 240 hitter or so, you know, could never, maybe even a 230 hitter at some points, and just could never get on base enough to really do anything on the base pass. I know he had a couple of seasons with the Reds of 50 plus stolen bases, but just never consistent. I think he had an on-base percentage of like 280, 300 one season. And it's just like a guy like that, you would think, just bury the ball in the ground and you're going to be standing on first base with a base hit.
Hard to do now when the league has become all about home runs.
Yeah, he was probably, you know, a decade too late in the MLB. If, you know, he was playing in the early 2010s, maybe even too. He'd be one of those most coveted guys. Because, I mean, you talk about guys like Carl Crawford and everything, too. You know, could get you 15 home runs, but, you know, he was a singles hitter that would steal 50 to 70 bases sometimes with the Rays. But that is our Rookie of the Year synopsis, I guess you can say. You said Manager of the Year was tonight, right? And then Cy Young, and then MVP.
Yes.
Real quick, Manager of the Year. I know this episode is going to come out after the Manager of the Year voting is done, and we're already going to know. But for those people that are going to watch this first, hopefully before they learn who's the Manager of the Year, who is your Manager of the Year on both sides?
You're going to have to give me the NL finalists, to be honest with you. But the American League, I mean, Bruce Bochy, you know, takes a team to the World Series that lost 100 games a couple years ago. I hope he's a finalist. He better be a finalist.
It is. So for the American League, it's Bruce Bochy, Kevin Cash, and Brandon Hyde. For the National League, it's Craig Counsell, Skip Schumacher, and Brian Snitker.
Okay. All right, Hank. So I go with Bochy for the sole purpose of the fact that they won the World Series. If Texas didn't win the World Series, I would have voted Brandon Hyde. Just because, you know, the Orioles are, you know, they're loaded. National League, I'm going to go with Skip Schumacher. I mean, nobody expected the Marlins to even sniff the postseason, especially playing in that division where you have Atlanta, the Phillies, the high expectations of the Mets. And, you know, the Marlins were able to find a way into the playoffs. They got spanked in 2 wild card games, but, you know, that's still a postseason berth to be very proud of. And, yeah, I think it's no question that it's Skip Schumacher. AL can go either way, Bochy or Hyde, but I think it's Bochy.
I agree with your National League pick. I think it is Skip Schumacher just because you look at the level of talent that Craig Counsell had and Brandon Snitker had I mean, he had two MVP finalists, or, you know, two top five MVP guys on his team, and a guy that could have finished top five in the Cy Young Award, and just a loaded, you know, offense for the Braves. And Skip Schumacher, you know, they didn't get hot until the second half when they got Jake Berger and Josh Bell on their team, and then their pitching started to step up. You could look at Sandy Alcantara and how bad of a season he had, and they were able to, you know, kind of skirt around that. And they're not going to have him next year because of the Tommy John surgery. But I agree with you on Skip Schumacher. I don't agree with you on the American League side. I think it's Brandon Hyde, just because purely prediction based. You had Kevin Cash and the Rays, who won 99 games. They were expected to win the AL East, or at least contend for the AL East like they did. And you had Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers, who, after signing Corey Seager, signing Marcus Semien, they go out and they get Jacob deGrom. They have Nathan Eovaldi. They were expected to make a deep run and win the AL West. The Orioles weren't expected to win more than 85 games this year, I think. I think they were projected maybe even 82. So two games over 500, and they win 101 games. Now, I know they got swept in the American League Division Series by Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers, but I think what Brandon Hyde did with such a young team, you talk about Grayson Rodriguez and D.L. Hall trying to be in the starting rotation. Gibson, and then you had Dean Kramer as your top two guys in that rotation, and you win 101 games. You lose Felix Bautista for the last month and a half. You had Yennier Cano in the back end of the bullpen, but then the young guys coming up, you had Gunnar Henderson. You had Keston Hersted that came up a couple of times. Westberg came up, right? So just the young guys.
Aaron Hicks, too.
Aaron Hicks.
Middle of the season.
The young guys that came up that he had to basically develop in the middle of a season, thinking that they were only going to win 75 to 80 games, and he was able to develop him. And Adley Rutschman was a Gold Glove finalist this year. Did he win the Gold Glove? I don't remember now. I don't remember off the top of my head. I should have probably known.
See,
that.
If they picked one day to announce all the awards, I probably would know the answer.
Yeah, I'd have to scroll down further. But I mean, you have all of these guys that were 25 and younger that he was able to develop and get into a winning team a year sooner than what people thought was supposed to happen. In my mind, that's a no-brainer for Manager of the Year.
Yes, defying I have no disagreement with that.
Because I understand what you say with Bochy and everything, but if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that the Texas Rangers were going to win the World Series, I would have been like, yeah, they're a top five pick to win the World Series just because of the talent around them. Right, you talk about Seager, you talk about Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien, Jacob deGrom before he had to get Tommy John, just leading that rotation with Nate Eovaldi, who was really good and could have been a top five or a top three finalist for Cy Young if he doesn't get injured, you know, halfway through the season. So just that alone, Jonah Heim, Nathaniel Lowe, Josh Young, you know, that alone I think warranted top five World Series picks, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think they were, you know, top five in betting odds at least to at least make the World Series.
Yeah, listen, I have no disagreement with you. I will say, I mean, look, Jacob deGrom only made six starts. That rotation really started to come together after they got Jordan Montgomery in August, and even then Scherzer went down. You know, Scherzer barely pitched for the Rangers in the regular season, and he barely pitched the postseason too. So, you know, I think both managers faced their adversity. I do think Hyde faced a lot more, just considering the fact that it's the Orioles and they've been historically bad over the last 6 years. So, yeah, the AL East. I have no disagreements with you at all. You know, like I said, it could go either way.
And it was not a Gold Glove winning season for Adley Rutschman. That went to Jonah Heim, but now that you said that, I'm completely for just having it in one day, because the Gold Gloves were announced 2 weeks ago, Silver Sluggers were announced last week, and then you have a full week of awards, and then we're not going to know who's on the All MLB team until I think 2 weeks from now. So yeah, just have
it all on one day. Listen, we are innovation that excites. Put it in one day. I'll rent the restaurant. Put it in New York City. One day, everybody's there. You celebrate the season, and that's it. You're done.
So November 5th. We're November 14th. So November 5th is when they announced Gold Glove winners.
That was my birthday, too. I'm not paying attention to the Gold Glove winners on my birthday. Come on.
And then when did they announce Silver Sluggers? Because those already came out, I think.
I don't even know.
Or maybe they...
They did come out. They have come out. I know that for a fact.
Five days ago. So that's the 11th. So,
The 9th.
So 4 days after the Gold Glove Award winners come out, I had to wait until the Silver Sluggers came out. And I don't even remember who won Silver Sluggers for that.
The only one I know is Luisa Ramos, and that's it. Yeah. It's just, it's a disaster.
Anyways, so that's our Rookie of the Year, Manager of the Year award. Let's just go through, since we're not going to be on the air until next year, too. Cy Young, you got Garrett Cole, Kevin Gausman, Sonny Gray for the American League. Who do you think wins it?
Garrett Cole. And that's not unbiased. It's just he was the best pitcher in baseball this year. Not even close on a terrible Yankees team, too. Every game he took the ball, you knew he was going to give you seven innings of, however many strikeouts, and it was most likely going to be a win. It's not even close. I mean, Sonny Gray, great season. Don't get me wrong. But, it's a no-brainer, Cole.
Yeah, and I think Garrett Cole clinched the Cy Young when he threw that complete game shutout against Toronto the last day of the season.
Yes.
I mean, that was just a masterclass of pitching, and the way he just pitched all year, I think it's a no-brainer. National League, you got Zach Gallen, Blake Snell, and Logan Webb. Logan Webb is the only finalist on this list with a sub-500 record. He went 10-12, but he had a sub-3 ERA. In my opinion, I think it's Blake Snell. What he did, the same thing, with a losing San Diego Padres team, he's the only reason the Padres were as decent as they were. Not as good as they were, but as decent as they were, because every fifth game, Blake Snell was doing the same thing Garrett Cole was. 6-7 innings. I think he walked less than, he gave up less than, 110 hits this year or something.
There was
some weird stat where he had given up, 99 hits in, 20 games or something like that. It was something weird like that.
Yeah, I agree with that 100% too. I mean, Logan Webb, 10-12, record doesn't matter, but there are guys with lower ERAs in the league. It just is. Zach Gallen, yeah, good season, but what Snell did, and he's about to make a lot of money too, super impressive. It was the same thing with the Padres. They stunk, but every time he went out there, it seemed like it was a lock of a win.
Yeah, so I mean, I think those are no-brainers. Those might be a couple of unanimous Cy Young awards as well. But now on to MVP. You got Shohei Ohtani, Corey Seager, and Marcus Semien on the American League side. And then you got Ronald Acuna Jr., Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman on the National League side. Now, I think if you could have done the top four finalists, then you would have thrown Matt Olson for the National League side. I mean, Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna Jr., I think we're going to be in that MVP vote or MVP consideration. And then Mookie Betts and Matt Olson, you could have kind of flipped a coin for who was going to be that third finalist. But in my opinion, it's Ronald Acuna Jr. We've talked about this extensively on this podcast, why I think he won the MVP, just the dominating season he had at the plate. I think you have to reward that. It's the same way you would reward guys like, Miguel Cabrera. I couldn't think of his name for some reason. He just retired this year. That's why you honor guys like Miguel Cabrera. You honor seasons that, I'm drawing a blank now. Christian Yelich had those type of seasons. You have to honor a guy and what he did. And what Ronald Acuna Jr. did by going 40-70 while also contending for a batting title as well, it was unheard of. And I think it's going to be hard to see for the next couple of years. I don't think we're going to see that for a long time. In the National League, or at least in baseball in general. And I think Shohei Ohtani won it at the All-Star break. I know it hurts that he wasn't able to pitch for the rest of the year, but he still hit 40-plus home runs, still won 10 games this year, had a sub-3.5 ERA. Just what he did for a bad Angels team without Mike Trout for most of the year, I think he won it at the All-Star break.
Gonna disagree with you on the American League. While I do think that voters will end up picking Ohtani because, you know, he's the face of baseball. Yeah, you know, he hit the 44 homers and the 95 RBIs. But, again, we had this debate in the press box last year at the Trop. 44 home runs and 95 RBIs. He played for an Angels team that stunk. Corey Seager went out there. Yeah, granted, he missed a month. Shohei missed a month, too. Corey Seager went out there and led his team to a World Series. Now, again, it's not what you do in the playoffs. It's about what you do in the regular season. And I'm about to, yeah, I mean, Seager, 327, 96 RBIs, so more RBIs than Ohtani. Batting average is better. 33 homers and an OPS over 1,000. I mean, it's not a no-brainer, but, you know, I'm just placing an argument here for Corey Seager. I think it's got to stop. You know, we got to stop overlooking the fact that, obviously, yeah, you know, it's a historic season for Ohtani. But you know what? Every season's been historic for Ohtani because he's the only one who pitches and hits. It's the same thing. Now, last year was a little different because, you know, Judge broke an American League record. I get it. But I'm putting my case out there for Corey Seager. I think he deserves a little bit more credit. And I think he's just getting overlooked by Ohtani. And just quite frankly, like, is Ohtani really helping the Angels win? No, they stink. They loaded up at the trade deadline. They lost, what, 6 games in a row? He's sitting there crying in the dugout and then gets hurt 3 weeks later? Like, I'm sorry. You got to help the team win if you're going to win the MVP. Braves, yeah, you know, Acuna, no doubt in my mind. I'd be shocked if he doesn't get it. But I'm just making my case for Seager. I know Ohtani's probably going to get it, but I'm just making a case that I think Corey Seager should be the MVP.
Yeah, and I think, listen, I understand that. And he was fighting for a batting title. He lost it on the last day of the regular season to Yandy Diaz of the Rays. So I completely agree. It's just that Seager didn't pitch. And that's, I know you were saying that it's always been a historic season because nobody's ever done this. And we have to, it's no longer comparing Ohtani to Ruth. It's comparing Ruth to Ohtani. That's the type of seasons he's had, and everybody that tries to come in afterwards, you know, if Caglione of the Florida Gators tries to come into the major leagues and do the same thing that Ohtani's doing, he's going to get compared to Ohtani, not to Ruth. So that's the only thing. It's just because he's a judge not breaking the single season American League record away from possibly three-peating as MVP. Because last year he finished second to Judge, and Ohtani probably had a better season last year than he did the year that he actually won the MVP. But Judge broke a record, and that's and what I said about Acuna had to happen last year. He broke an American League record. Now I know a lot of people were going crazy because he was still 13 off of the actual Major League record, but breaking an American League record still needs to hold some type of value. So you had to honor Judge last year. But that's the only thing that is going to hurt Seager, in my opinion, is that Shohei Ohtani for the first half of the season was not only the best hitter in baseball, but one of the best pitchers in baseball too. And Corey Seager missing a month during the first half of the season, I think kind of hurt him. And I know he was in the running for it for a while, but I think once he got hurt and Ohtani was able to put up the numbers he did, I think that's what won him. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to be unanimous by any shot, because Simeon also had a really good season. We're not even talking about him. But I think just the first 4.5 months that Ohtani had were so good that missing the last 6 weeks of the season isn't going to hurt him at all.
Yeah, you know, look, it's hard to argue against that. You know, I'm just, you know, trying to come out here and make a case for a guy who I think, you know, deserves it because he went to the World Series. You know, it really is just a shame that the Angels are terrible. It really is. So, yeah, I mean, look, I can't argue with it. It'll probably be Ohtani.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to talk about Ohtani a little later and with free agency and everything, but let's go into some managerial news because a lot of teams made a lot of moves, including Ohtani's possibly former team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They hired Ron Washington as their new manager, who couldn't be more beloved in the baseball world. I mean, I was extremely happy that he got another managerial job. I thought he could have possibly gotten one this year after they won the World Series. Or no, I'm sorry. He could have gotten one last year after the Braves won the World Series. Maybe they would have, he would have capitalized on that really good run that they had in the postseason. But I'm extremely happy that he was able to get another shot. He took the Texas Rangers to two straight World Series, was a strike away twice from winning the World Series in 2011 against the Cardinals. So extremely happy, and could not have happened to a better person in the baseball industry. I mean, you see all the videos of him not only helping his own team with infield drills, but will actually help the opposing teams with infield drills and trying to help their infielders. That's just how much he loves the game and wants to help it grow and wants everybody to be great, which is what a lot of coaches need to do. A lot of, at least, you know, bench coaches, hitting coaches, fielding coaches, guys like that, assistant coaches, because he is just an all-around great dude.
Yeah, Wash is a perfect ambassador for the game of baseball. I mean, I'm shocked he wasn't a manager earlier. I mean, I know he managed the Texas Rangers, but in terms of, you know, he had a long stint coaching with Atlanta. And I mean, rightfully so, you know, good team, went to the World Series. Yeah, happy to see it. I mean, he's a great guy, great coach, you know, great personality. And I'm curious to see for the Angels if this is like a desperation hire in terms to try and reel Ohtani, you know, to come back, just because of what some other teams have done in different sports. I mean, I remember, you know, just being a New York Islanders fan, NHL, you know, the Islanders hired Barry Trotz, who just won a Stanley Cup, you know, in effort to try and re-sign John Tavares, who was an upcoming free agent and the face of the franchise. So I wonder if it's like a plea saying, hey, like, we finally have a legit skipper, you know, here's our guy, he's going to overhaul everything, and we're going to win. Will you come back? I don't think that'll be the case. I think you're going to have to spend money on actual talent in order to reel Ohtani to come back. But no, I think it's a good hire. And I think either way, if Ohtani comes back or he doesn't, I think Wash will still find a way to be, you know, have his team competitive. Heck, he was a coach on the Oakland A's Moneyball teams, and they were competitive. So, you know, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a perfect hire for the Angels. I think it's not going to be a Bruce Bochy-esque hire, but you're hiring a manager that, you know, is worth his weight in salt. He knows what he's doing. He led a couple of teams to some pennants and some World Series. And he was on a really good coaching staff with Atlanta that had a lot of really young talent that he was able to develop. And that's what the Angels need right now. They have the talent. They have the young players. They just need to develop. You have Ohapi. You have what's the shortstop?
Zach Neto, Campbell.
Zach Neto, thank you. You have Ohapi, you have Neto, you have guys like that. You know, you have Joe Odell, who has been kind of lurking in the minor leagues, can't really find a spot in the major leagues right now with the Angels, but you're having guys like Ron Washington who can hopefully develop him into what he needs to be. You have young talent with Reed Detmers on the starting rotation. So it's a really good manager that kind of mixes well with the new age and old age of baseball, you know, with what the Braves had, because they had a lot of, you know, new generation, old generation players with Charlie Morton, guys like that. And then you had Ronald Acuna Jr. and Austin Riley, who's like the new age of baseball, really. So I think it's a perfect hire for the Los Angeles Angels organization. And I don't know if it's going to help keep Ohtani around, like you said, you know, with the Islanders comparison, but it's at least a start to keep Trout around. Because right now, yeah, you might lose Ohtani, but if Trout is disgruntled, and who knows, maybe he had a say in who he wanted to hire, and they talked to him and they said, hey, we're thinking about Ron Washington. What do you think? You know, this is a guy that's played against Ron Washington when Wash was the Texas Rangers manager. So maybe it's a way to keep Trout around, develop some talent around him, and, you know, keep Trout happy enough to where he at least stays with your team and doesn't ask for a trade this offseason or the next.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I think that kind of becomes your number one priority if Ohtani goes, you know, which I think it looks like he will. You know, you got to keep your superstar and really the face of the franchise. You can say what you want about Ohtani. Trout is the face of the franchise. He's been there for, you know, 10 plus years. So I think it's a good start for the Angels. Well, I guess we'll keep moving here. Stephen Vogue, we'll save the big boys for last. Stephen Vogue, Cleveland Guardians manager. I think that's a phenomenal hire. Really good baseball man. You know, I think his work ethic, and he's just really smart. You know, I never forget the video of him in Oakland his last year, 2022. Final day of the regular season. He's going to retire. They're celebrating him, has his family there. He's not even catching that day. What is he doing? He's blocking balls, you know, prior to a 110 game. Game 162 with 6,500 people at the dump of the Oakland Coliseum, you know, working because he's setting the example for the younger guys that, you know, you continue to work hard even, you know, even in his last day as a big leaguer. Great hire. Good to see him in the game, too. You know, I think he's, you know, one of the game's, you know, bright minds.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the Cleveland Guardians managers, they go from a really good dude in Terry Francona to a really good dude in Stephen Vogt, who knows a lot about baseball. He's been around baseball a lot, kind of like a Kevin Cash type of person, a backup catcher for a lot of teams. I know he made an all-star team and has been a really good player for a lot of organizations, but, you know, they say catchers make the best managers, and we'll see if Vogt can do that. But, I mean, another guy just like Ron Washington, where a lot of people around the organization, a lot of people around the baseball industry, happy that he got a job. And I'm excited to see what they do, because that's another team that has a lot of young talent. They have, you know, they have a Jimenez at second base. You still got Stephen Kwan in left field. That was, you know, had a good sophomore year. You got Jose Ramirez, you know, so you have these guys coming up. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Shane Bieber. You got Tristan McKenzie and Tanner Bibby in the rotation now. You traded away Savali this last year, but you still got Plesac up with you. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that rotation and what they do with that team. But I think they have a good guy managing it all with Stephen Vogt.
And I think it also helps, too, that he was part of a Joe Maddon team. You know, he played for Joe Maddon, and Joe Maddon knows culture better than anybody. So I think that's big as well. Mets hire Carlos Mendoza, former Yankees bench coach, to be their next skipper, replacing Buck Showalter. Mendoza actually just had his press conference, his introductory press conference, about a couple hours ago at Citi Field. So, you know, being local, I you know, turned on the TV and listened to what he had to say. I liked what he had to say. You know, he didn't show any arrogance. He showed a lot of confidence. You know, the nature of New York, he's used to it. I see a lot of negativity out on Twitter about him, and I'm going to get to that after I get your take on it. But I personally think this is a really good hire. He's a really good just baseball guy. You know, no prima donna Carlos Beltran, prima donna, you know, bringing Jacob DeGrom's former agent Brody Van Wagenen in. Like, this is a legit, you know, baseball hire that I think Mets fans should be excited about, as, you know, maybe not the best consolation prize for not getting Craig Counsell, but still a really good pick.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a guy that just knows baseball, right? So it wasn't a flashy pick like it was with Buck Showalter a couple of years ago. Like you said, it wasn't Craig Counsell. It wasn't Carlos Beltran. It wasn't one of those flashy names, but it's just a baseball dude that is just going to bring basically what Ron Washington's going to bring. Just a lot of knowledge to a team that has a lot of talent that way underachieved this last year. Actually sold off Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. They sold off a lot more pieces than Tommy Pham and Mark Canna. So this is a team that desperately needs just a guy that is going to put people in their place and kind of handle the media as well. I mean, Buck Showalter did a great job of that last year, handling the media and taking care of that side of the baseball industry. But the other side of it is just having a guy that's going to be kind of no nonsense, runs things the way he wants to run it, and hopefully get the Mets back into not only the postseason, but fighting for a pennant.
Yeah, and that's what they want. And look, you know, I see a lot of New York people frustrated about the hire. You know, First of all, these New York fans, I think, just want something to rant about. Obviously, they want Steve Cohen to spend his money, and we're about to get into that with counsel. But, you know, the demand, I thought, was just ridiculous for a guy who hadn't won anything. Mendoza, they're saying, yeah, you know, he comes from a Yankees baseball operations that's flawed. He's not the baseball operations guy. He manages the team with Aaron Boone. You know, he's not in there with the baseball ops people upstairs. He's not with Brian Cashman, you know. And say that the Yankees were bad this year, this past year. They made the LCS in 2022. They made the LCS in 19, playoffs in 2020, playoffs in 2021. It's a historically good organization that has had some flaws. You know, he takes that knowledge. He's at the helm of it now. And everybody has nothing but good things to say about him. I think it's a really good hire, so I think Mets fans really need to be patient here and wait it out. I will say one thing that interested me in his press conference. Somebody asked him, you know, do you expect this team to win, be a contender? He said that that we'll compete. You know, he didn't say win, be a contender. He said we'll compete. So I think the Mets are kind of sticking with that plan that, you know, 2025 is going to be the year where they get back to, you know, trying to go for it and win. So, you know, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, the whole 2025 thing, too, I don't see that as being completely true. I think they're going to go after some guys.
I do this too. Offseason, I mean, they got a ton of money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you still have Pete Alonso for right now. I mean, this might be his last year because he's a Scott Boras guy, and they're going to have to pay him a boatload of money to keep him. But you still got Francisco Lindor. I mean, I think if you just add a pitcher or two, and I mean, I know they tried to do that last year with Verlander and Scherzer, but don't add guys over the age of 39. Maybe add like an Aaron Nola or Blake Snell or both if you can. But you got Alvarez behind the plate. You got Vientos at third. You got Brett Beatty. See what they can do. But I think they're, you know, like it wouldn't surprise me if they went out and traded for like a Juan Soto to put out in right field and put in that lineup and try to make it a little deeper. But I don't know. I think they're gonna make a move this offseason that's gonna show. Not only their team, but their fans that they're trying to compete this year as well and going on to 2025.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think they'll compete. I don't know what they're going to do, but, you know, we'll see. I think they'll definitely, you know, they'll contend because they have the money to do it, you know, and they got the right guy at the helm, you know, to be the baseball ops guy for this team. Finally, Craig Counsell, Cubs. I think that was kind of a shocker to everybody. David Ross, well-liked in that clubhouse. I think the fact that they collapsed may have done him in to say, hey, like, you know, we were so close. Like, let's go get a new guy. I feel bad for David Ross. But Craig Counsell was the biggest fish out there. I still think it's absurd that he's getting $8 million a season when he's only won one playoff series in 9 years. And we don't know what the Cubs are going to be because they don't know about Cody Bellinger. They don't know about Marcus Stroman. I don't know. I was kind of shocked to see that he went to the Cubs, especially with the proximity to Milwaukee, the same division, everybody calling him a snake. It's like, if you're going to only, you know, so much of it to me, it sounded like so much of it was about, you know, well, my family's in Milwaukee. You know, I got to stay with them. You're really only going to go an hour and a half away? Really? Like, I thought this was going to be, a big move or stay. You know, it's like, you know, I was shocked that it was the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked that he left Milwaukee just because of all the trade rumors swirling around the team, too. What are they going to do with Devin Williams? What are they going to do with Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff? You know, a lot of those guys are on the chopping block, basically, as to whether or not the Brewers are going to keep them. So I understand in the form of the Cubs where they just missed out on the playoffs, so they might spend a lot more money this year than the Brewers are, because the Brewers look like they're trying to cut some guys and rebuild. So that wasn't surprising, but it was surprising to me that the Cubs, I mean, this was what, only year two of Cody Ross? Or was this the first year? Or David Ross, I'm sorry.
No, he's been around for a little while. The fourth year of David Ross. Yeah.
2020, 21, 22, 23. So yeah, fourth year of David Ross. So I'm surprised just because of how close they were to the playoffs. Maybe they would have given him another year. But I mean, they did the same thing with Rick Renteria when they hired Joe Maddon in 2015, right? So that's when Theo Epstein stepped in and took over his baseball operations, and he wanted to bring his own guy in. They brought in Joe Maddon. They won the World Series 2 years later. So maybe there's some general idea that Craig Counsell can kind of be a Joe Maddon-esque player. But you're right. They got to figure out what they're going to do with Bellinger. I think they need to try to re-sign him. They got to figure out what they're going to do with Marcus Stroman. I think they should try to re-sign him as well, as long along with another pitcher, maybe like a Blake Snell or an Aaron Nola, because that would give you a really good 1-2 punch, because Stroman had a great season for the Cubs this year. Ian Happ took a step forward. He's been struggling the last couple of years, but he bounced back, won a Gold Glove this year, was a finalist for Silver Slugger. Again, don't know if he actually won or not. I should probably know that before I start talking about it, as I'm looking right now, efforting.
While you're looking, I think, the luxury you have is that you have guys that want to play there. Like Stroman has said so many times that he wants to be a Chicago Cub. You know, so I personally see him. I see him coming back in the offseason. I really do. Bellinger, I don't know. I think, you know, with him being a Boris client, he's going to demand a ton of money. So I don't really know what they're going to do about him. But we'll see.
Yeah, and Ian Happ didn't win a Silver Slugger, but he had a really good year. And with Stroman, too, it's just semantics, because he was going to make $23 million, I think, this year. He probably thinks that because of the season he had, he can sign another, you know, longer contract for more money, you know, in like the $28 million range or so, try to get a couple, you know, $5 million more. With Bellinger, first of all, I think it would be stupid for the Yankees to not try to go after him. But for the Cubs, I think you need to try to re-sign him some way, somehow. So there's a couple of question marks with the Cubs, but I think there's less question marks with the Cubs than there are with the Brewers, just because you don't know if Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff are going to be back there in your starting rotation. If you have those two guys out, you're counting on Freddie Peralta to be your ace, and I don't think you can just go through the season with Freddie Peralta as your ace and four other lackluster starters.
Yeah, you definitely can't. Which, I mean, brings it to the Brewers. I mean, they hire Pat Murphy. They kind of elevate him from bench coach to head man. Ricky Weeks, former Brewers second baseman, you may remember back in the day. He was one of my favorite players when I was a kid. He is now the bench coach. So, new era in the Brewers. I mean, a lot of hate for Counsell, by the way, up in Milwaukee. I mean, this is a big rivalry. You know, Brewers, Cubs, you know, these two teams don't like each other. The proximity. You know, everyone talks about Cubs-Cardinals, but you have to drive 5 hours to see that. You know, Brewers and Cubs is, like, easy. Like, that's, like, you know, that's pretty easy to do. You know, hour and a half. So, you know, a lot of hate towards Counsell. I'm shocked that he left. He's, like, rooted in Milwaukee. But, yeah, you know, I think it'll be pretty interesting. You know, I did see some stat. I think it's pretty funny. Counsell, I think I saw on Twitter that he's making more off of this deal, and because of that, he's making more money as a manager than he did as a player. Craig Counsell had a pretty long career. Like, he retired, I think, in like 2010 or 2011, maybe in 2009, but he started pretty early. Like, he was on that Miami Marlins 97 team that won the World Series, and he was on the Diamondbacks team too, that won it in 01. So, yeah, I think it's pretty funny. I think it's outrageous that he's getting paid $8 million. He hasn't won a thing.
Yeah, and real quick, too, before we possibly end this episode, Joe Espada is named the Astros manager, the bench coach that was under Dusty Baker. So they just promoted from within, like a lot of these teams decided to do. I think the Brewers also promoted within. Did you mention Pat Murphy?
Yeah,
Pat. I was kind of half paying attention, half thinking about something else in my mind. So sorry if you said that. But Pat Murphy and Joe Espada, two bench coaches that got promoted, to the managerial spot. So, you know, good for them. And it's credit to what the organization thinks about them too as bench coaches. You know, they think that they don't have to hire from without or from outside of the organization, that they have good guys inside. And really, we were just talking about Milwaukee. Pat Murphy might just be there because they're going to look for some outside help. Maybe a Buck Showalter in a year or two, depending on the direction that the Milwaukee Brewers go. Phil Nevin, we talked about this earlier, is getting some managerial consideration. I forgot by what team. But in my mind, I think that's a terrible idea. If you're a team looking for a new manager, I think you go the complete opposite of Phil Nevin. But hey, teach his own. I think he was actually getting looked at for the Brewers spot, and then they just hired Pat Murphy. So good for them. But Phil Nevin should never, ever be in charge of a lineup card or a pitching staff or anything else that managers have to deal with ever again. Just no.
Yeah, I agree. He's absolutely terrible. I did want to touch on one more thing before we go. Brian Cashman has completely let his guard down.
Yep.
It started with that, I'll call it, nasty, outrageous interview at the GM meetings in Las Vegas last week, where, I mean, I have never seen him like that. He was animated. He was swearing at he was swearing at Joel Sherman. And Joel's been covering New York baseball for 30 years. I couldn't believe it.
And on top of that, he lied.
Yes, he did lie.
I don't know if you saw that. He said they had the smallest analytical team in baseball, and yet they're the second behind the Rays.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's one thing to get frustrated about the team being bad and the fact that, you know, everyone is giving you, you know, a hard time because this team's supposed to be good and everyone's calling for your head. But to go out and say we're pretty effing good and that you believe in the analytics department is asinine. It's out of your mind. And then also to let his guard down. I mean, the Yankees, you know, and I hate that they do this, but they're, you know, super proper. You know, Teflon. They're Teflon. And Cashman goes out and says, yeah, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, he's not going to play every day because, you know, that seems to not be his game. You know, it's like, what on earth? Like, how did this – so you can't fix him? That's essentially what you're saying. So you can't fix him. Giancarlo Stanton, everyday player when he was with the Marlins. Hit 59 home runs with the Marlins, won an NL MVP. Comes to the Yankees, hurt. Every single year, it had one of the worst years, probably, the worst year of his career last year. So instead of saying, oh, I think we're good, and oh, yeah, you know, I liked how he did this too. He was like, yeah, you know, the Joey Gallo and the Sonny Gray, you know, couldn't handle New York. But the team is the reason why they weren't able to handle New York. I don't know about Gallo. Gallo was flat out terrible. I don't need to go into him. But Sonny Gray, I mean, he comes there, was a stud with Oakland, and they were taking pitches away from him. They were like, yeah, don't throw the slider that way. Oh, yeah, don't throw your changeup that much. Goes to the Twins, and he's a Cy Young finalist. So, like, maybe it's what's going on inside the organization that you really need to, you know, take a look at. Because, you know, the way they're handling some of these guys that come here is a joke, to be quite frank.
Yeah, and Hal Steinbrenner, you know, kind of got mad and basically had a meeting with Aaron Judge, because Judge came out and said too that I don't think they're handling. How did he put it? I don't think we're valuing the analytics that we need to value. And with Hal Steinbrenner asked him which one it was batting average and RBIs.
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me that you don't value a guy driving runs in? That's what Judge was saying, that they don't value that. I mean, that's hard to believe that Cashman still has his job if he's not taking guys that are run producers. That's the whole point of the game, is to have a guy on your team that's going to bat above 250 and hopefully drive in 70-plus RBIs, because if you have six of those in your lineup, you're going to win at least 85 to 90 games.
100%. It's I couldn't believe it. I actually could not believe one, that he let his guard down. I thought it was actually kind of funny. And two, you know, the fact that he's saying these statements that, you know, every New Yorker knows are just so inaccurate. So, yeah, you know, Yankees are probably in for another awful year. Excited for it. And, yeah, that's kind of – definitely wanted to touch on that today because that was crazy.
Yeah, no, that's if – I mean, I keep telling my dad, like, if the boss was still around, this whole organization would look different. I mean, Boone would have been fired midseason. He probably wouldn't even have made it to this season. Cashman would probably be gone. There'd be a lot of rolling heads if Mr. George Steinbrenner was still alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Kay said the exact thing last year after they got eliminated by the Astros. 100%.
So, I mean, we'll see what the offseason is going to look like as I have a – I don't know if you can hear
you
it.
You got to change the battery.
I got to change the battery. it's spooking my dog. She's right next to me. You had to change the battery in my fire detector, my fire smoke detector, or whatever it's called. So great. So after this episode, I'm going to go search religiously around the house. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the Yankees are going to do because I still think, like I said earlier, I think they'd be stupid not to try to go after Bellinger, a left-handed bat that's going to hit you 40 plus home runs in that stadium. I mean, it's a no-brainer, and a guy that can actually play you some defense and drive some runs in. But yeah, as there we go.
It's moving, man. It's calling. It's calling your name.
Yeah. I got shadows right next to me freaking out because of the beeping. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of Young Lads. Harris, you got anything to add?
I am quite all right. Yeah, that was a good one.
We're officially on Ohtani watch. I think next week we'll talk about some free agency or free agents and give you our predictions of where they're going to land and maybe even do for how many years and for how much. But I think that'll do it for this episode of Young Lads. This was episode 24 of the Young Lads podcast. Harris Eisenberg, thank you as always for joining me. I am Peter DeFee Jr. saying so long, and we will talk to you next week.